Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 35. Here in a wonderful day in Puyallup, Washington, with the one and only sign guy. He's so fly. Let me tell you why. I ain't got to lie. He might be better than baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Sign guy, how you doing?
Doing all right today, Coach.
All right. Why don't you announce our guest, brother?
We have today one of the all-time greats in professional wrestling, one of the greatest punches in the history of this sport, CAC member, Bob Cook.
Hey, Bob, thank you, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
One of the greatest of all time. One of the greatest of all time.
Yes, you
know it. I won't be able to get out of my house. My head will be too big.
Well, you're in the top 10 best punches for sure.
Well, I appreciate it. You've never felt it, so you might change your mind if you did.
That's true. Yes, I do need to feel that one day. Maybe we got to get into a battle royal down there in Florida or at the CAC or both.
Yeah, maybe. I've been in training for a coffin match lately. Well, you know, I'm trying to lose weight so I don't have to make new friends to carry the coffin because I don't have enough right now. But I'm trying.
My goodness, that's your home state of Florida there, man. You've made a great mark in independent wrestling in the Florida scene there. You've held lots of titles in the area. And, man, you've had an impressive run, man.
Well, I had a lot of fun. That's the main thing.
And one of the Malenko alumni, the long list of successful wrestlers come out of there. Tell us a little bit about what got you into this crazy world of professional wrestling.
Well, I think I was dropped on my head. To be honest with you, I did have a cement mixer dropped on my head when I was very young. Split it wide open. My mom could see my skull, she said, I remember. I was like probably 5 years old. But anyways, that might have something to do with it. But no, I just got hooked on wrestling in 1975 here in Florida, and ever since then I wanted to be a wrestler, and I got lucky. I was coming out of the Armory in Tampa where they had wrestling every Tuesday night forever for championship wrestling from Florida, and there was a flyer on my car. It's actually a friend's car, but a flyer on the car saying, become a professional wrestler, and it was for the Great Malenko School. I just got lucky, although I moved to Tampa after I graduated from high school with the idea of becoming a wrestler because that's where they taped Florida wrestling, but I had no idea how to do it. I just got lucky. I went to the Sportatorium, which is where they taped the show, and I asked an old wrestler named Gordon Nelson after the show, how do you get in wrestling? I was only 18 years old. And he said, well, you got to come in and try out, and you got to be in really good shape, which in those days meant Bob Roop or somebody would stretch you and send you on your way. Luckily, I didn't have to go through that, thanks to Malenko.
Nice. Okay, great. Yes, because that makes a lot of people who – some people might be able to make it all the way, but they get discouraged by being treated like that. And I had a little bit of that myself getting in, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that Malenko didn't do that at all.
Exactly. And you hear the stories about all the other different places that some of them, probably half of them did it. Maybe less than half did it seemed like, did that type of stuff.
Yeah, and there's like Steve Kern, you know who Steve Kern is. He tells the story of,
yeah.
You know, he was friends with Mike Graham, and they beat him up at the wrestling school, or at the sporting tour, wasn't really a school, but beat him up every day. And to the point, they never smartened him up until, like, just at the last minute.
Yeah, you hear
I'm just
so
glad
many
that didn't happen
stories.
To me.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
I probably would have quit. You know, wrestling's rough enough without getting beat up for real.
My God, and let's just take Al Snow's story, for example, that Ole Anderson, what happened to him, you know, in his deal, you know, and if Al Snow wasn't the person he was and as in shape as he was and such a diehard person, he wouldn't have made it either.
And some people want it more than others, I guess. But again, I didn't have to go through that, so I can't relate. And I don't even understand. I understand it from the era it happened because the business was more protected. But you hear about it still today, and that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, and then a quick deal on my story. I called Don Owens when I was 18 years old and told him, I want to come down there and try out. He only had one question for me before he hung up on me. He said, did you wrestle in college? I said, nope. Click. He hung up on me. And I was blown away. I was like, what do I do now? Now I know I have two options. I could move to New York or move to Georgia. And I'm like, that don't sound very good. I'm an 18-year-old kid that doesn't have any money. I grew up poor. This doesn't look very good. I think I need to switch the career path. And that's what happened till I got 30 years old at a show for DeBashi, and he had Playboy Buddy Rose at a fan challenge, and I accepted the challenge. My goodness, or I wouldn't be sitting here either. But anyway, I sent you my standard questions. Excuse me, Bob. I sent you my standard questions. So I guess me and Sign Guy will switch back and forth. So, Sign?
Well, I'm sure Coach would like to know, to start off, Bob Cook, do you have a favorite coffee beverage that you intake?
No, I don't. Unless you count Mountain Dew, because it's loaded with caffeine, too.
Yeah.
That's true, it is, but
it'll
ask not a coffee.
We get that answer more about half the time now. A lot of people don't drink coffee anymore, yeah. All right, Sign, keep going, buddy.
All right. Well, one of the things that you're involved in pretty heavily these days is the CAC. For the listeners today that might be on the fence of joining the CAC as a member or attending the CAC festivities in Las Vegas, what would you say to them to sway them to making the leap and paying the money to become a member, going to the CAC reunion, and really taking part in the organization?
Well, I would say if you truly love professional wrestling, not just love it, but appreciate the people who are in it and all they've done for it. If you ever go to one of those conventions, or even we do this thing in Tampa called the Legends Lunches that Brian Blair hosts, who's also the president of the CAC, and a lot of the older guys, myself included, have trouble walking. Some of them are on canes and walkers. They put everything they had into the professional wrestling business. And as a fan, especially as a wrestler, you should want to join the club because it gives back to people in the wrestling business that gave everything and maybe don't have anything to show for it now or need a little help here. And then I'll be honest with you, CAC has helped me in some times in my life when I needed it. Recently, we had a hurricane here in Florida, did a lot of damage. They helped me. That's what they're there for. They're not there just to collect money and have a fun reunion every year and take pictures and smile and sign autographs and then talk behind your back. They're there for a purpose. They're there to help people in the wrestling business that fall on hard financial times for whatever reason. And they've been doing it for 57 years now, I think. It's crazy. And it's not that expensive. It's like $30 a year, or you can do it a lifetime, $300. And you get like 4 newsletters a year, discounts for the reunions. And the reunions are a blast because all kinds of legends are there. And if you like fans, you can mingle with them too. Personally, I don't care about it. I'm just kidding. But it's just a good time. And it really is like a family atmosphere. Everybody's there for the same reason, and that's to support the club and the love of wrestling.
Exactly.
So
and
I would
man,
say personally,
blessed...
like...
Excuse me for interrupting you, Bob. Keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that every single wrestling school, not only in the country, but the world, it should be a requirement for their students to join the club just as much as it should be a requirement for their overbearing, obnoxious, pig-faced bastard, sorry-ass excuses for students to buy wrestling boots, something that seems to be forgotten. When I was in wrestling, we got our gear from K&H Wrestling Wear and B-Bar boots. Nowadays, to be able to get it at Goodwill, Walmart, wherever there's a sale, and it has nothing to do with professional wrestling. I'm just saying, though, if you're a wrestling school coach, you should embed in your students the importance of the Cauliflower Alley Club. You can't make them join, obviously, but if you instill in them the importance of it, they should have enough pride in what they're doing and enough respect for the business and the people from the past and the people in the present for in the future when they're going to be falling on hard financial times, whoever that might be. And the Cauliflower Alley Club will be there for them, and they won't be there for anybody if people don't join. So it should be something that should be required and coached along with, you know, everything. This is when you're sitting there talking to your students what they should do. Hey, you should join the club for all. You can give them the information. It's not a big deal. It's not that expensive. They probably spend more money on booze in a weekend than it would cost them for a whole year for the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Exactly. And I'm a proud lifetime member myself. Had some wonderful times down there, especially with you, Bob, with the legendary party we had down there with myself, you, Mickey Hint, the rest in peace, Mickey Henson, Jerry Briscoe, Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, myself, you, Darlene Christ, and Lily Anderson. My goodness, that was like one of the best times I ever had.
Yeah, that was a blast.
You know, a lifetime of memories that will never be taken away from you, you know. And rest in peace, Mickey. And you know, the weird thing that happened, we're doing our little party and having fun and just old stories and stuff. Next thing you know, a sandstorm rolls in. We open the window and we see the sandstorm flow by in the pyramid outside. It was just amazing.
And then you all talked me out of jumping out of the window. I was a little bit mad, but I got over it. I got over it.
No, we didn't, Bob. The world is a better place with you, brother. I can't wait till you get hired at one of these companies. They definitely need you. Just like you said, all four of those people shouldn't be throwing punches in that match just recently.
Yeah, I think it was more than four. Like everybody from Cesaro to Danhausen to, I don't even know the name of half those guys, throw the most pathetic punches I've ever seen, and they fail to realize they're not wrestling at a high school in front of a bunch of people that don't even really want to be there, but they're there for their friends. They're not wrestling at the local YMCA. They're wrestling on national freaking television where TBS was a proud sponsor and host of World Championship Wrestling since the 1970s until Eric Bischoff and his cronies killed it. But the point is, you allow that on your – I don't get it. I don't want to be a guy – I don't think I could be an agent because I don't have the mindset to, you know, help somebody put together a match. That should be something you should be able to do based on who trained you, you know. Even though I'm an old man today, in my mind I could still go in the ring and do what Malenko taught us without knowing anything but the finish. And even that you don't really need to know. You just have the referee tell you when you get in the ring. That happened a few times. But
exactly.
I'd like to be a detail guy where you just call guys where you just call guys back after their match and say, look, guys, don't do that again. Do it like this, or learn how to do it, or don't do it at all, you know?
And like you pointed out, that all of them big vets are in the back there. Not one of them said anything, or they must not have, because they continue to do it out there. And I consider Cesaro one of the greatest wrestlers.
Yeah, and he threw a couple of punches in that match where it didn't even come close to touching the guy. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't. And I understand that the cat's out of the bag, as they say. But people want to be convinced. They want to believe. They want to be sucked into the moment. And it can still happen, because it does happen. But if
and as a promoter, we might have to keep going, though.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
As a promoter, we might have to tell Cesaro he's got to do the Kevin Sullivan trick and go out back and hit the can 100 times. Come on now, Cesaro. You're better than that.
Realistically, though, at his age, as long as he hasn't been in the business, if he either doesn't know how to throw a punch now or just simply doesn't care whether it looks good or not, it's not going to change now. So you're not going to, at 40-some years old, go, oh, geez, I'm making money. I'm doing what I want. They're making me the champion here and there. I don't care.
I ain't hitting no can. I ain't never hit a can, he says.
If it's not important to the company itself, it's never going to be important to the wrestlers, and that's sad, because it should be their priority, not just punches, but everything.
Exactly. That helps it more legitimate, be more legitimate. It used to be back in the day, yes.
Right. People want to believe. They could sit there with their friends on a Sunday drunk and be talking about, hey, I watched that wrestling. It's all a bunch of crap. And then Monday go to the Mid-South Coliseum and see Jerry Lawler against Terry Funk. And in that moment, believe what they see is real because the wrestlers are convincing them it's real because they're that damn good.
Exactly.
It's their job. They had pride in what they did. By the way, Jerry Lawler is the best puncher of all time. But... when he was on, anyway.
That is fair. Sign?
Because
were known as the best puncher in the business, and Jim Ross used to always talk about that on commentary. How important do you think people like Jim Ross were to you having the longevity by always expanding on how great of a puncher you were, how underrated you were? Do you think that gave you a few more years because people heard that type of commentary and it stuck with them, or do you think that it wasn't as important as other aspects?
It was important to me because it made me feel good, but I knew my position in wrestling. I wasn't a star. I was there to do what I did, and I had fun. I was probably more complacent than anything. I enjoyed the no pressure. You know, I'd show up on time, do what I was told. I never had an ego. I didn't cause drama. I didn't have a problem with losing, obviously. But, you know, who started that was Bill Watts. Bill Watts told those guys to do that. Although Jim Ross did it before Bill Watts came in, and so, as did a lot of, like, Gordon Sully was always good about that. But Bill Watts is the one who started the whole Bob Cook has the best punch thing, and he did it right in front of everybody, too. I was wrestling Van Hammer at the center stage in Atlanta, and Bill Watts was on commentary with Jim Ross. And after the match, I went upstairs to get a Coke, and Pee Wee Anderson coming up, and he's like, Cook, Watts wants to see you. And I was like, oh, crap, what did I do? Because usually that would mean that he wanted to yell at you, right? Although he never yelled at me. He did yell at guys. He was the guy who actually pointed out people's error of their ways, something that seems to be lacking today, and they didn't do the same thing again. Makes sense, right? Maybe he wasn't the most cordial about it, or the most polite. It was more like a FF this, don't do that, don't you dumb son of a, you know, but it got over. The guys may have hated him, but he was doing it because he loved the business. But I come down the hallway, and all the guys in the hallway, and he goes, hey, I want you guys to know something. Bob Cook throws the best punch I've ever seen next to my own. He had to throw that in there, which I don't, you know, you got to do that. But he says, I want all you guys to sell it, and I want all the commentators to put it over. And that's what they did. Even Jesse Ventura, and I appreciate it. It was awesome.
That's like a wake-up call to those guys, you know?
But, yeah, so it was Bill Watts who actually, you know, pushed that narrative. And it's, throughout the years, it's I tell the same story over and over when I talk to people about it. But that's who started it. And I appreciate it. Bill was always cool to me. He'd sit in a dressing room and tell me stories and whatever. Even his son talked about it on a podcast recently, Eric, who was a great guy that got a lot of flack from people unjustified. And Bill wanted me to teach Eric how to throw a punch. And actually got me booked on a lot of house shows with Eric during that era because Eric was green and we worked a bunch of shows. So anyways, always appreciate Bill Watts. I do.
Okay, and then, hey, before I get on to my regular questions here, how do people get a hold of you, Bob? And I see you got your GoFundMe I just noticed today. Tell people about how they get a hold of you and your GoFundMe, please.
Well, the GoFundMe was, that's a thing that a friend of mine put together during the hurricane thing, and I appreciated everybody that helped out. And I should take that off my Facebook because it was 2-3 months ago now. And I left it there just because the message that I put with it is showing appreciation to everybody. But I mean, I don't do a whole lot of anything now, but I am on Facebook as Bob Cook. I think it's Bob Cook 63 or so. You know, if you go to Facebook and type in Bob Cook and there's anything related to Evel Knievel on my either profile or on my, cover page, or you'll see Evel Knievel posts, you know that's me. With Instagram and Twitter, which I don't use often, but I go to Instagram a lot because I like Instagram. A lot of hot women on Instagram, you know.
Okay, yes, exactly. All right, so let us know who were some of your heroes growing up, as in ordinary life, music, wrestling, and sports.
Well, I was never a sports fan, although I loved Muhammad Ali, still love Muhammad Ali, but my ultimate and greatest hero, and I know you're going to know the answer, is Evel Knievel. I got hooked on Evel Knievel in 1968 when I was 5 years old after he jumped the fountains in Caesar's Palace. He started making news, and it just resonated with me like nobody ever in my life. And I still love Evel Knievel to this day, as obviously as I was talking about this game that I play that I created myself. Turned it into an Evel Knievel game. And then I became friends with Evel the last 10 years of his life, starting in 97, and which was like the crowning achievement of my life, I think, of everything, you know. As much as I love wrestling, Evel was long before wrestling and was just a huge part of my childhood. So be able to meet him and then become friends with him, where he actually came to my house, you know, and signed the wall on my that I had at the time with a big, huge mural painted on the wall of him. So that's my ultimate. As far as wrestling goes, my ultimate hero would be Terry Funk. But really, when you go to the four people who made the most impact on me as a young kid was Evel Knievel, Don Rickles, Muhammad Ali, and Terry Funk. And then, of course, Raquel Welch.
Okay.
Rest in peace. Now I definitely want to go to heaven. Raquel Welch and Marilyn Chambers in the same room? Come on.
Goodness, yes.
All
okay.
I got to say is, God, cover your eyes. Cover your eyes.
And then Robbie Knievel's right there behind his dad, right?
Yeah, he was great too, and because he carried on the legacy, although he didn't do it in the same manner that Evel did, he did a great job. And I got to see him jump live and in person, something I never got to do with Evel when I was a kid. I only got to watch him on TV. But I saw Robbie jump 30 cars in 1990 up the road from me at a local speedway, which he sold out at the time. It was raining and everything a little bit. It was crazy, but... And then I got to meet him at the Evel Knievel Museum grand opening because a lot of the stuff that I – because I used to have one of the biggest collections in the world for a private collector, Evel Knievel memorabilia. I had a replica of his motorcycle because I couldn't afford a real Evel Knievel motorcycle because those are like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But all my stuff now are the big stuff, like the rocket that he used to jump the canyon. I had a huge 13-foot replica of that. And all different stuff's in the museum, so I was part of the grand opening. And Robbie was there, and we got to hang out with him, and he was cool as heck, funny. And then, of course, he died this year. 2023 has been a real bastard of a year. I keep checking every day if I'm on the list, but no.
Jeez, and then the Northwest has a huge place in the – Evel Knievel history of the King Dome in Idaho with the rocket. My goodness.
Right, and Robbie lived in Seattle for years, Portland. Not Seattle, Portland, Oregon.
Okay,
you're
awesome.
Talking Seattle, Washington, yeah. Yeah, the King Dome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I recently started recreating his King Dome jump in my game that I play.
Yeah, I'm enjoying those, yes.
Yeah, I love the game. I mean, it's just, it's one of the, I've never played a game as much as I played this. I've literally played it hundreds of hours. I played it 10 hours last night. It helped me fight my depression. It takes me back to my childhood, and I just absorb myself in the game, or immerse myself, whatever the word would be. I guess it beats immersing myself in, you know, water without coming up for air at the moment.
Jeez.
So, you know, it's better than, I wouldn't say it's better than a bunch of sleeping pills and booze, but it gets me through the day.
Goodness. Hobbies are a beautiful thing. It's awesome, man.
Now, Bob, one of the things that in the last few years has become popular in American mainstream wrestling is Japanese wrestling. We're seeing New Japan tour the United States by itself now. You can watch New Japan on Access TV. A lot more American fans are familiar with the stars of Japan for different companies in that country. When you were wrestling, it was more of a rite of passage to go to Japan and get that Ribera Steakhouse jacket and be able to say you worked there. What do you think of the way that Japanese wrestling has finally caught on with the American audience?
I mean, it's great if they like it. I don't watch it. It's nothing against it. I have nothing against it at all. I just haven't gotten into it. You know, I love the old school Japan wrestling, but not necessarily for the Japanese wrestlers. I love the Hansons and the Brodies and, of course, the Funks and all those Harley Race and Vic Murdoch and all the greats from the era that I grew up on. I just don't follow it today, so I couldn't tell you who anybody is or, you know, other than maybe who people I've heard of on because of AEW that I'll catch a clip of. Jay White or somebody, I guess, is popular in Japan. I've watched a couple of Kenny Omega's matches when I hear they're six star matches or whatever Dave Meltzer thinks they are. And I'll watch them and go, yeah, it was a good match, but I'd rather watch Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk from the Mid-South Coliseum from 1981 again for the millionth time.
Makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Again,
right.
I have nothing against any of it.
Did you play sports in high school or growing up? I know you said you wasn't a sports guy.
No, I never did. And I was lucky I had a father who I believe I got it from my father because my father was a businessman. He owned auto parts stores with what turned out to be a crooked partner, but he owned auto parts stores. So he was a working guy. You know, he would be one of those guys that left in the morning when it was dark and he got home at night when it was dark. But so he never watched sports, and I never watched. It's like a trickle-down effect, I think, a lot of times, right? If you're your dad's watching sports, you watch it with him and whatever. He never was like, it's football season, boy, you better be in, you know, get on the football team. He never did that, and I appreciate that. And he never liked wrestling, but he didn't, like, discourage me from becoming a wrestler. He didn't understand why I wanted to be a wrestler, because especially when I first started training, he saw me come home beaten up and bruised and, you know, just for the nature of what you do in training, you know, having trouble walking and being sore. And he never understood why I wanted to do that to my body, which I think now, why did I want to do that? Well, that's a good question. But anyways, so he never pushed sports on me, and I just never got into it. Other than Muhammad Ali, like I said, I loved Muhammad Ali as a kid. I quit watching boxing when he retired.
Okay, and then that was my next question was, what's your self-defense background? I know that just watching Muhammad Ali sort of rubbed off a little bit, and then with your great punches, and then I'd hate to see you mad out there.
To be honest with you, I'd never been in a real fight in my life. I mean, I slapped a few fans around over the years, and luckily they were all drunk. but I've never been in a real fight in my life in high school or nothing. When I was in high school, I wasn't a sports fan, but I was friends with, like, the people on the football team and the wrestling team. So I always, they were like my protectors. It sounds weird, but it really was.
Okay.
I was like the class clown guy. I don't know, but I was always friends with the tough guys in school. And so no one messed with
me. Okay.
But I was,
right,
again,
cool.
That's so for me, my self-defense is either having someone with me who can help me or I run, you know. Although Brian Pillman and I threw a guy in a dumpster one night coming out of a bar in Atlanta at 7 in the morning.
Wow, okay.
Wish there was cell phone cameras now. That'd probably get a lot of hits on YouTube. Yeah. Brian Pillman and some guy we don't know threw a guy in a dumpster. But I know the guy. I don't know who the guy was.
Speaking
that
of Brian Pillman,
really cool
he
movies.
Is one of the long line of second and third generation wrestlers that we've seen in the last couple of decades become stars. You've been around where you've seen the fathers and the sons of a lot of these. Dustin Rhodes' first match was with you. Barry Windham, a great second-generation star. Mike Rotundo's sons have become very good. Ted DiBiase's sons were very good. Often, Sika's sons have become superstars in the sport. Looking at the landscape of professional wrestling, do you think that it is easier for second-generation wrestlers to make it in the business, or do you think that they have an even harder road ahead of them when they start than someone that doesn't have familial ties?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person because, yeah, it depends on the person. You could be the – well, look at David Flair. I mean, Ric Flair is one of the greatest wrestlers ever. By the way, I wrestled Ric Flair. I always have to put that in there. But David Flair never made it because he just didn't have the look. He didn't obviously have the drive or the passion for it. So it all depends on all that. Look at Charlotte Flair. I mean, she went on. She's like one of the greatest women wrestlers of all time, I think. So it depends. Like, and it also depends. It depends on everything. You know, it's like one of those. All the stars have to align, or the planets have to align. You know, you got to have the right push behind. Like Brian Pillman Jr. doesn't seem to be taking the world by storm. You know, I mean, I don't know. I've never met the guy. Although he was at a place, like at a table sitting next to us at a Comic-Con that we did a couple years ago for a Cali for Alley Club. He didn't say a word to me, and nobody came up and asked for an autograph for him. So take that, Brian Pillman Jr. But anyways, so who knows? It's like luck of the draw, I think. I think we actually have a better – well, you know, I can't say a better chance, but they have a door that opens for them. It's up to them to make it happen once they go through the door, like Charlotte did, right? And she's had a lot of flack from the people over the years. Oh, she's getting extra because she's – well, no, she's damn good, and she put her heart and soul into it. Can't knock that.
Goodness, yes, I'm a huge fan of her. She is one of the greatest. You're right. And then some of these questions have a lot of different answers. We know that. But what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, when it comes to Charlotte, you hear the stories that she helped set up the rings and take them down when she started on NXT or wherever she started was an NXT or maybe even the Florida version of NXT before it became NXT. When Steve Kern was running, I don't remember, but she did all of that and still got flack from people, you know, because she's getting an extra push, but she's damn good. Why wouldn't you give her an extra push over someone else? She's got the name, she's got the look, she's got the, you know, she developed a passion for it, even though it wasn't her dream originally.
And she's great. She's a great technical wrestler, and she doesn't just, she's good at the basics, and she's good at advanced wrestling, my goodness.
Right. There's just a lot of people out there whose sole purpose in life is to hate and destroy people's confidence if they can. And most of that is driven by the person who's doing that's own their own dislike for their own life, basically.
Dissatisfaction,
that's it. But they, you know, they hate their own life. They failed at everything they tried, so they hate to see people who succeed.
Exactly, and then there it is. The haters cannot like anything because they just hate everything. Exactly, yes. All right,
there's a guy.
Now,
you know who Evan Ginsberg is?
Yes.
He produced that movie 350 Days, which is a great movie, and I've said that, but I blocked him on Facebook a long time ago because everything that comes out of his mouth, no matter how good something is, he hates it. And I can't stand people like that. Like, you could watch that Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn stuff from the Royal Rumble, and then the match they had at Elimination Chamber and find nothing good out of it, even though it was some of the best stuff done in this last 20 years.
Wow, yeah. I know. I have seen – I'm friends with both of you, and he's been a guest. We are fans of his, but you're right. He is a little salty.
He's like that Chris Cruz guy. I hate that guy, too. And he was just a stupid commentator for a brief time in Florida or in WCW back in 1990 or something.
Okay, now this next question, I'm sure the fans are excited to hear, and I am too, so we can look up. What are some of the most memorable matches you've seen and been involved with?
Seen, wow, you know. I watch anything that Terry Funk does because, like I said, I love Terry Funk or Jerry Lawler. My top five favorite wrestlers of all time is like Jerry Lawler, Terry Funk, Harley Race, Superstar Billy Graham, and Flair, I think, basically, as far as top five. But, I mean, it's just so many great matches. Jerry Lawler against Harley Race in 78 is on YouTube for that time limit match. Fantastic. Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee, the Loser Leave Town match, or any match those guys had. If you want to learn how to punch, watch those guys. You know, I have a saying, watch, copy, perfect. Watch guys that do things right, copy how they do it, and perfect it as your own. It's not as simple as it sounds, but it can be done if you care. If you can practice a moonsault 10 hours a day on a mat in, you know, in your backyard wrestling ring, then practice a punch 20 hours a day. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So watch guys that do things right, like Dick Murdoch and Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler and guys that had great punches, Killer Carl Cox, and copy how they do it. Now I lost my train of thought.
Exactly.
Thinking about
the most memorable matches. I'm excited to hear about some of yours. You've had some nice main events there in the, all over the South there.
You know, I've had a lot of just awesome times. And I always say, you know, I was never the biggest star, but I had as much fun as anybody could have. I mean, nobody ever disrespected me in wrestling. No one ever shot on me or tried to hurt me or stretch me. Everybody treated me really well. No one ever ribbed me. I think I flew under the radar on that, thank God. But just my favorite matches of all time were with a guy that I actually trained, a guy named Rick Ryder, who used to do TV with me in WCW. But I trained him, and we had main event matches all over Florida for 10 years, cage matches, death matches, chain matches, you know, any kind of match you could imagine, bloodbaths. And it was just so much fun because people believed we were beating the crap out of each other, but we weren't hurting each other at all because guess what? Malenko trained me right and I trained Rick right. But I even have a newspaper article where the headline says, "Think wrestling's fake, think again." And it goes on telling about how our match in particular on that show convinced the writer of the article that him and I were really fighting, which we weren't. We rode the show together. But we used to sit in the hot tub after the show and just, like, talk about how the people reacted to the matches. And it was nothing big time, you know, just your usual high school shows. But back in that era, you know, you always drew good crowds and stuff for that kind of stuff. Not always, but most of the time. But as far as, like, mainstream guys that I – my favorite wrestler and someone who I – say when people ask me who the greatest wrestler I ever wrestled was, that's Dean Malenko. I believe Dean is the best I ever wrestled. And Joe Malenko was great,
sweet,
too. I don't want to diss Joe because I love Joe, but I worked with Dean more because there was a company here in Florida called Suncoast Pro Wrestling starting in 89. It ran for 3 or 4 years where I was the mass superstar. And I was like the top heel in the company. We had TV. We did interviews. It was a blast. And I worked with Dean Malenko. He was a top babyface. We just had all kinds of matches, you know, different types of matches, you know, 45-minute matches, just great. And I worked with Dean a lot in the early years of my wrestling, too, and it was, you know, he's just the best. So smooth, you know, like as smooth as silk, poetry in motion, light as a feather, perfect timing. Could dropkick you coming off the top rope right to your face, and all you felt was the bump you took, you know, looked like it took your head off.
Yeah.
That's the art of wrestling. If you want to hit people for real, get an MMA.
For sure, yeah. Sweet, man. We'd love to hear about that.
But yeah, Dean was the best I ever wrestled, and just so much fun. But I had so many. Just, you know, you can't really gauge how someone really is good when you're just doing TV stuff. It's 3 to 7 minutes, you know. But if you work with them enough, you can't. Like, I mean, my God, Ricky Steamboat, unbelievable. Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson. I mean, God, the list goes on and on. Cactus Jack. Just so many that were just so much fun and easy. You know, I got to work with the Steiners and the Road Warriors several times, and they were easy as could be. They never hurt me once, although Rick Steiner did give me a fat lip once and knock me out with a clothesline. But I don't think he did it on purpose, do you? But they were always cool. I'm one of the few jobbers, if you want to call that. I hate that term, but that's what most people like to say. Is this a jobber? Well, good for me. But I was one of the few guys that Scott Steiner wanted to punch him, and he would take a bump for me. And same with Rick.
Sure. I always say if I did half as much as you, I'd be really happy.
Well, if you ate half as much as me, you wouldn't trust me.
Sweet.
But one of the things that in the era we're in right now that's been a little bit of a hot button issue is the use of blood in professional wrestling, just because of medical science, learning more about bloodborne pathogens. A lot of fans and a lot of people in the industry are a little bit leery of seeing blood introduced into matches. Some people think if it's done sparingly, it's perfectly fine. Some people would prefer to see blood in every single match that happens. There's proponents all over the map as far as blood goes. Where do you sit when it comes to blood and wrestling, both when you were full-time active and how it relates to what you're seeing right now?
You know, how many times can someone sit back and go, oh, I got hepatitis C from that wrestling match? How many documented cases are there of something like that? And realistically, they test for everything else. Why not test to see if someone has one of those? They said this guy and this guy, they tested positive. They can't do a blood match. Or, you know what I mean? I don't know. But as a kid, I loved it. That was one of the things that attracted you to wrestling, was it was different than everything else on TV. When I first started watching wrestling in 1975, I thought I discovered the greatest thing ever and couldn't understand why anybody else or why everybody else didn't love it, because it had everything you wanted. It had drama, it had comedy, it had violence, it had, you know, over the top characters, and, you know, it appealed to every sense of your mind, you know, and it seemed to live by its own rules. It didn't care what anybody thought. It was what it was, and you either loved it or you didn't, and I loved it. As a wrestler, I loved having blood matches. I didn't like the act of bleeding, you know, what you had to do to do it. But I loved those kind of matches just for the reaction of the people, because they got into it more. And it's like anything. I think when you use it right, it's great. But when you do it too much, like AEW recently, it's like every time John Moxley puts his little freaking, you know, whatever he wears, it looks like he just came in off the streets picking through dumpsters. But every time he gets in the match, he bleeds. So I think it takes away from it. But I don't have a problem. I mean, guys probably get more diseases from rats over the years than they ever would from, you know, bleeding, you know?
Okay. All right. And then,
you mentioned
some of the different characters that you've wrestled in wrestling. What are the characters that you've wrestled in wrestling, and what was some of your most successful ones?
You mean as me, myself?
Yeah. Well, you were yourself, and like you said, you were under a mask a few times.
Yeah, you know, I was briefly under a mask in 1987 as a called Shark Murphy, when there was a company here in Florida that was one of the first wrestling companies that went public. They raised some money through stock somehow. And Howard Brody, you know Howard, right? He used to come to the California Athletic Club, died last year, I think, or the year before. He was one of the guys that was part of that. But Malenko was part of it. And, they had a lot of guys that were part of it, obviously. Bob Roop was running it, I think. And but anyways, I was Shark Murphy, and I had a partner called Piranha Steel, and we were managed. We were called the Predators. I was Shark Murphy under the mask, and the other guy was Piranha Steel. He didn't have a mask. And we were managed by Angelo Poffo. I just posted a picture of it yesterday because it was like the anniversary of Angelo's death. So that was one character. And then in 87 here in Florida, Kevin Sullivan and Mike Graham made Jerry Gray and I the Mighty Yankees because they liked baseball. So they called us in the dressing room one time, hey, we want to team you guys up and call you the Mighty Yankees. Okay, you know. And then we became the Florida Tag Team Champions. So we beat Mike Graham and Steve Kern. That's right. This jobber you're talking to beat Mike Graham. Now, I'll admit it. Jerry loaded his mask. I didn't have nothing to do with it. But we won the titles on TV. And then I was the mask superstar starting in 89, like you said. And a lot of people have been over the years, well, you weren't, you know, you stole the gimmick from Bill Eadie. And I always tell them, well, look, listen to this, you idiots. When the great Malenko calls you and says, Bob, we're going to do this TV show called Suncoast Wrestling. I want you to be the mask superstar and be the top heel on the company. What do I say? No, of course not. It's the great Malenko. I say, yes, sir, where do you want me and what time do you want me to be there? And that's how that happened. And he was the guy who actually was the manager of the original Mass Superstar in the 70s. And Bill Eadie had long stopped using the gimmick. He was doing Demolition by then. Although the funny thing is, he got wind of us doing that, and he caused trouble to where we actually had to do a thing on TV where we come out there, and I had a manager named Penelope Paradise. And she comes on, she goes, we want from this day forward, we don't want you to call him the mask superstar. You people are smart enough to know he's wearing a mask. From now on, he's just the superstar. So we had to do that because Bill Eadie was complaining about it, even though he didn't do the gimmick anymore. And Malenko's the one behind it also, which was just petty crap, you know, how wrestlers can be.
Wow. Right on. And Penelope, tell us a little bit about... Tell us a little bit about Penelope. She's a sweetie.
Oh, I love Penelope. She's one of my best friends. I met her in 1988 after a show in Tampa at the Channel 3 studios, which, coincidentally enough, is where the NWA taped their TV in Tampa a couple weeks ago. But it was from Mike Graham and Steve Kern. You know, Jim Crockett came in 87 and bought out the original championship wrestling from Florida. I know I'm rambling, but so I have to start from the beginning or I get confused because I'm old.
That's fine, yes.
But Crockett came in and promised the world, you know, oh, you're going to do this, going to do that. When what he really did was he bought Florida Wrestling and just to put his TV show on the Florida Network or the Florida channels, you know, their syndicated channel. So then he shut down Florida Wrestling. But then in early 88, Mike Graham, Steve Kern, and Gordon Sully got together and restarted Florida Wrestling and called it Florida Championship Wrestling as opposed to Championship Wrestling from Florida. And me and Jerry Gray were used with them, obviously. Well, obviously, I'm telling you. So, but because we are the Mighty Yankees for Championship Wrestling from Florida, Mike and Steve used us again for their new company. And which was just a blast, too, because the first couple of TVs, or maybe the first month worth of TVs, they used the Memphis TV as the Florida TV. And they would fly the guys up that they were going to use in Florida once they got their own TV tapings going at Channel 3 to the Memphis TV, right? So me and Jerry Gray flew up there one Saturday morning with Gordon, who, by the way, we go to the executive lounge, whatever, at the Atlanta airport at 7 in the morning, and Gordon goes, you boys want a drink? Yeah, we're okay, Gordon. But Gordon, by the way, was a great guy. But we went to the TV.
Oh, yes.
Did TV that Saturday morning in Memphis, and we had to work the whole week. That was the deal. You had to work the whole week while you're there. But one of the funnest matches we ever had, we got to wrestle Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond for the AWA tag team titles at the Mid-South Coliseum that Monday night, which was, you know, just a blast. But to go back to Penelope Paradise, because like I said, I'm rambling. It happens. And I never did drugs, but I have a memory problems. But after a TV taping in Tampa, I met her and I was talking to her. Hey, we're all going out to eat at this pizza place. You want to go? And she came with us. It was me, Robbie Idol, Rick Ryder was there. Sean Waltman was there because Sean was a friend of mine before he got into business. And he would go to shows with me once in a while and stuff. And he was there with us, right? So we're all at this pizza place. And, you know, obviously I'm talking to her because she was good looking. And I, you know, even though I was married, hey, I like good looking women. What do you want from me, people? But and we got, there was a big fight in the restaurant, right? The, Robbie Idol started a fight. And the cops were called. This is our, like, the introduction of me and Penelope's Penelope's paradise, Penelope's friendship. Like, there was only, like, a couple, another couple in the restaurant, and we were all just being our obnoxious selves having fun, right? And the guy's, like, in a booth and says, hey, could you guys keep it down? I'm on a date. And, boom, that's all that Robbie needed to hear. Next thing you know, there's dishes flying and pizza flying, and the cops are there. We all got thrown out. The best part was most of the pizza was gone, and we didn't have to pay for it. But amidst all the chaos, I'm like, lean over at Penelope, and I'm like, hey, I got to do a show next Saturday. You want to go with me? And she went with me to the show. It was actually Robbie Idol, Sean Waltman, and Kim, that's her real name, went to the show the next week too, which another incident happened. We got chased through the city, chased through the city of the, you know, where we were after the show because some nut. And that was another fun thing, right? You know, like Penelope's in the back seat, Robbie's in the front driving, Sean Waltman's in the back, and I'm in the front with Robbie, and this guy's chasing us through the streets of the city like a lunatic, and Robbie's turning his turning signal on every time he's turning, and Penelope's in the back, stop turning your turning signal on. He'll know where we're going. Crazy.
And then
we also got a police escort out of that city once, me and Penelope.
You've been managed by another sweetheart in wrestling for the last few years. Tell the fans about her.
Oh, Delicious D?
Yes.
Yeah. I was just at her house for the last 2.5 weeks up until last week. But, yeah, she's great. I've known her for, geez, I don't know how long, 30-some years. But, yeah, she's like one of my best friends as well. And been there for me during all the BS with my wife a few years ago and other good times, bad times, you know, one of those deals. But, yeah, she's great.
And then I got a story about all of us, you, me, Lily, and Darlene, was all sitting together at the Northwest Symposium at the Cauliflower Alley, all of us with big smiles on our faces. I'm still kicking myself in the ass for not getting a group photo of all four of us. Damn it.
That's where the time machine comes in. I keep looking on eBay.
I know,
but can't find any.
I don't have a picture, but nobody can take that away from us.
Yep. Wrestling has provided me with the best friends and the best times of my life. Outside of my relationship with Evel Knievel over the years, wrestling has been the highlight of my life. And I always give credit to the great Malenko because without him, who I love like a father, as most of us who were trained by him do, it never would have happened because he was just the best. Not only as a human being, but as a trainer, a coach, you know. I always like to stress when I do these interviews to let people know that Malenko was just an unbelievable person. He was one of those guys that you could talk to about anything at any time in your life. And by the time you got, no matter how you were feeling that day, when you left the room, you felt like you could take on the world. And there's nobody other than, I mean, other, like Evel Knievel was like that too to me. He became close enough to where I could tell him anything and he'd give me great advice. But Malenko was just an amazing person.
Okay,
right
on.
The whole Malenko family, Joe Malenko, who I just saw last week. The whole family, it's just horrible. That's what happened to Dean with his Parkinson's and stuff. I mean, a guy that's so opposite than what you see on TV was always play what the Iceman or whatever. He's like one of the funniest guys you'd ever meet.
Wow. Yes, I agree.
Well, one of the other things in professional wrestling right now that I'm sure you I've been keeping track of and kind of seeing where the business is going is the advent of the live stream era where a lot of promotions will put their shows on either YouTube or they will put it on one of the streaming services like Roku or IWTV or what have you, and fans can watch the shows from the comfort of their own home. a lot of people think that this has kept the independent wrestling scene alive during the COVID era, where fans were limited in being able to attend matches. A lot of people think that this is going to ultimately hurt business because fans will become accustomed to not going out to the events in person, which will hurt ticket sales. There's arguments on both sides of it. What do you think of promotions, especially at the independent level, live streaming their shows?
Yeah, I think it's great because it gives you all the options you could ever possibly want. Sometimes it's good and bad. It's good because you have those options. It's bad because a lot of times when you watch, you go, what the hell is this crap? I can't believe this is wrestling. How is wrestling still alive? It's like you can go back and watch old championship wrestling shows from the WWE in the 70s and question how it survived all these years. It's so bad. So it's the good and bad, right? You get to see the best of the best and the absolute worst of the worst. But at the end of the day, it's a choice you have to watch or not watch. I think it's a great option. You got to think back when the pandemic hit. The only form of entertainment in the whole world that didn't completely shut down was professional wrestling. Professional wrestling probably legitimately saved the lives of several people who were just sitting there going, "Thank God, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to kill myself." Oh wait, Raw's on. You know. They didn't shut down. And everything else shut down, from the movies to sports to, you know, everything. Wrestling's always been there for people when times are tough, right? When the 9/11 happened, what was the first sporting event, or I don't know how you call it, sport, whatever, event was WWE.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Good and bad, and but, then, you know, you have to. There's more good in wrestling than there is bad if you just look for it. You got some people who just seem to watch wrestling with a specific reason to just crap on it, you know, which I don't do that. I like watching wrestling, and I focus on the good, and, you know, there's always been good and bad in wrestling. It's good, I call it this, good, bad, and ugly, and it's been that same way throughout history, you know. We could go back and watch championship wrestling from Florida in 1976. You got the great Mephisto against some guy who shouldn't even be in the ring. You got Haystacks Calhoun, who can barely get in the ring, with two guys who don't even know what a ring is. And then you have Steve Kern against Bob Orton Jr. at the end of the show, and you thought it was the greatest thing you've ever seen. So there's always been good and bad, and you have to take the good with the bad, or else just don't watch it. The Royal Rumble this year I thought was fantastic. The match, the show tomorrow night, which I won't watch, but I'm sure it's going to be great.
Okay, and then you did mention Dean Malenko and some other people, and Rick Ryder is your favorite people to work. Any other favorite people that you worked with?
You know, there's so many over the years. I mean, now you got me on the spot. I'm trying to think who else. You know. You could almost name anybody that, and I'd say, yeah, they were good. No. But favorite people, like, Jerry Graham, the guy who was my partner as the Mighty Yankees, still one of my good friends, although he's been going through a lot over the last few years battling cancer. But he and I had some amazing matches, in my mind anyways, and in his mind, not only as tag team, but against each other over the years. They would do, because he was just so smooth. The first time I ever met him was in Orlando, when I just got lucky enough to start wrestling for championship wrestling from Florida, which, here I go again, I'm rambling, but which was just by chance, right? I used to go to the Malenko's every Tuesday and Thursday in Tampa. I had to drive there from where I live, which was over 100 miles away each way, and that was before I-75 opened up, even when I started. So with all the, like, 41, if you know anything about Florida. But on the weekends, Malenko had a school out in Plant City, Florida, which was a few miles from Tampa. He had a guy, we called him a money mark at the time. He had a ring set up in his barn. And I'd go there on the weekends once in a while just to get extra training. And you'd also work with guys that you wouldn't work with on Tuesday and Thursdays, who just happened to be more in that area. And I went up there one Sunday morning to work out, and mainly I would go just to talk to Malenko and hang out and just absorb the knowledge, right? And this guy named Louis Estella, who wrestled for championship wrestling from Florida, would come by once in a while and train with us, and he just happened to come by that Sunday in the morning, where it was morning, and he said, "Hey, we need somebody to wrestle at 80 Gram Sports Complex tonight." because that's where they had wrestling every Sunday night for championship wrestling from Florida. And I went, hey, I'll do it. And I didn't have my stuff with me, which you think, well, because I never trained with my gear, right? I brought my boots. I always wore my boots. Listening out there, people, professional wrestling boots, you know what those are? They're those things that were made for professional wrestlers. When I was a kid and I first started training, Malenko said, you got to get yourself a pair of wrestling boots when you first got there, and he gave us the pamphlet. I couldn't wait to get my first pair, and I wore them all over the place to break them in. I still wear them once in a while, just no, never mind. But so I can't imagine you wanting to be a wrestler and not wanting real wrestling boots, right? It's like when you're a kid starting out, you want a real wrestling mask. Hell, I wanted that when I was a fan. But, again, I'm rambling, but I wrestled Jerry Gray that first night in Orlando, and Jerry didn't know me from Adam. We're in the dressing room talking a little bit, and we're saying, well, let's do this, that, and he's like, can you do that? Are you sure you can do that? Because he didn't know me from, anything. And we went in the ring and had a great match, and we've been friends ever since. So that's that long story. But he was one of my favorites.
Hey, man.
Another one of my favorite matches ever was me and Dory Funk Jr. against Jerry and Bugsy McGraw on a show that Jerry ran. It was called Battle Under the Big Top. And it was held in Orlando. Jerry had TV. And it was out of the local fair. Jerry would run fair shows, where they'd pay him to be there. And we had a huge crowd. And there were, fans back in those days would pop for everything. That was one of my funnest matches ever. They billed me as a cousin of the Funks. And I love the Funks anyways, but that was just another fun match, fun memory.
Man, Bob, we love your stories, and you're not rambling. And I'm guilty of not texting you or calling you in a long time because I enjoy talking to you and listening to your stories and hearing what you got to say. And we were wondering, how much more time do you got today?
I don't have a life, so whatever you want to do.
Okay. All right, well. Let me see here. Sign guy, what do you got?
Well, besides the CAC, one of the things that a lot of wrestling fans have gone to do in the last few years to maintain their link to wrestling's past is going to the fan conventions and meeting some of the stars of the past, the current stars, and meeting fans from different parts of the country, different walks of life, and trying to keep that history going. Do you personally enjoy going to do these conventions and autograph signings and things of that nature?
I don't get asked to do that. I wish I would get asked to do that where they would pay me. Like I see a lot of people, that fans don't necessarily care about. They get paid to be there. I'm like, hey, why can't I do that? I wish I was maybe 26% more of a star than maybe I'd be asked. I go to them once in a while with friends. Like I have a friend, Sean Corona, and we go to the fan fest once in a while just because we know the people that are there. Like last year we went to a thing called the River City Wrestling Con. It's in Jacksonville because Kevin Sullivan and Andrew Anderson are there, and we got in with them and we hung out with them. But we also, go around and see everybody that was there, DDP, who I haven't seen in years, and Ron Simmons, Barry Windham, and Steve Kern, who I see him more often. But people like that, right? But there's certain people that they bring in. Like they had Mantar there. Remember Mantar?
Oh, yes.
Not
Ornette's guy.
Some guy paid him to be there. And barely nobody went to his table. I'm thinking, pay me to be here. No one will come to my table either, but if you're going to pay this guy, I don't necessarily like doing that kind of stuff simply because I have a horrible signature, so it's embarrassing. Like if someone says, hey, I'm making out, have a say, hey, best punch in the world, my name's John, Bob Cook, whatever. I'd just be stressed out because I have such a horrible signature. I didn't prepare to be famous, which is a good thing I wasn't because I have an embarrassing signature, even though I do have a 3 trading cards that someone sent me to have signed. And like an idiot, I went, yeah, sure, send them to me. I'll sign them. I should have said at least send me $5, right? It's a couple Mountain Dews.
Definitely worth it, yeah.
I would do those all the time if you could be – I'd do those fan cards all the time if I could get paid to do it because I can pretend to smile and be nice. I don't have to necessarily like it if I could make money doing it.
Okay, hey, Bob, who were some of your toughest opponents in wrestling? And of course, we're talking as a work.
Oh, geez. Well, I don't know if you're talking that way. who's tough if they're not hurting you. I mean, as far as like really like badass tough guys, obviously the Steiners and the Road Warriors and Kevin Sullivan and I'm so glad I never had to work with that Big Van Vader guy though.
Okay, yeah, and then tell us some Kevin Sullivan stories. He has another one of the greatest punches in the business.
Yeah, he's a great punch. He was always fun to work with, and he's helped me a lot over the years. And he's always been like a Jim Ross type, you know. Always put me over on commentary, and even when we hang out with him, he does that still. But yeah, he's a great guy, and I had a lot of fun times working with him. I remember one time was me and Jerry as the Mighty Yankees wrestling him and Bugsy in Miami, and Kevin grabbed a ice cream cone from somebody and stuck it in my eyes, the eye hole of my mask. But it's little things like that that's fun, you know.
Cool. All right.
Improvisation.
Yeah, and then what about, I was a huge fan of Gordon Solie. How about some Gordon Solie stories?
Yeah, Gordon was great. I used to, you know, at the Sportatorium in Tampa, which was a real dump, but it had such an amazing history for wrestling. Because everybody in
the... Yeah? I said, man, he's trying to do the best.
Hello?
What happened?
I don't know what that was.
Sound like someone was being abused.
Oh, had an open
Stein
window.
Guy.
Sorry about that, guys.
No.
Okay, geez, Stein.
But, Gordon was a great guy, and I would spend hours after TV tapings in Tampa just sitting upstairs in the office and listening to his stories and talking about wrestling. And I remember one time we got in a dispute. We did a show in Naples. It was for abused women, a shelter for abused women. We did a benefit for them. Kevin was there and a bunch of the guys, right? But after the show, the host of the show supplied us all with booze and everything, and Gordon and I are sitting at the bar drinking, and we're like arguing about what year Dory Funk won the title. Not in a bad way, but we're like, Gordon's like, 1968. And I said, no, I think it was 69. Gordon, no, I know it was 60. Well, Gordon, I think it was 69. I can remember that. And then Gordon mentioned that on the WCW show like a couple weeks later in a match I was in. He goes, I was with Bob Cook recently in Naples, Florida for a benefit for the abused women. I thought, that's cool. He actually remembered that because we both staggered out of the bar.
Amazing. Cool. All right. John Guy, what do you got?
You mentioned Kevin Sullivan, and he, of course, one of the great minds in professional wrestling, and he booked successfully several different promotions. You worked for a number of bookers over the years. Who would you say were some of the guys that had the best minds for professional wrestling as far as booking it went?
I mean, definitely Kevin, definitely. Because he had to be considered that because he had it been in various areas, and you don't keep the jobs like that if you're not doing good. Dusty, obviously, even though a lot of people would criticize, the Dusty finish or whatever, but what are you going to do? But I don't know. I mean, it was because I was never like on that part of the business. I didn't pay much attention to it. I was kind of like everybody else in those era, just living your own story or world. Didn't really pay a lot of attention. I mean, I like when it comes to WCW, I'm not sure exactly who. I think Kevin was involved in that. 89, when Terry Funk came in, that's my favorite year for WCW. I call it the year of the Funker because I was there for all that. And, you know, I'd stay after for the main events on all the shows. Terry Funk would be wrestling either Sting or Flair, so you'd stay and watch because it was so good. But I like to tell people who they say, well, Bob Cook was just a jobber, and I get it. That's what my role was, even though I hate that term. I got four chances in WCW to do more thanks to Dusty Rhodes, and I blew every one of them. Me.
Well, at least you got the chances. My goodness, I don't know what I would have done for one chance.
Yeah, the one, you know, I was originally supposed to be the partner of Shanghai Pierce, you know, that tag team text last year in Shanghai Pierce. I was originally supposed to be the partner of Mark Canterbury.
Okay, wow, that would have been good. Nice. All right.
Yeah, so and the funny is...
Okay, excuse me. Keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, what's funny is I didn't know it at the time until it was like after it didn't happen. Because I was, they brought in Dennis Knight, who's a great guy, by the way. I've known him forever. I had hurt my knee. I had to have knee surgery when I came back. Jody Hamilton would still bring me up and have me do TV at just work security so I'd get a payday when my knee was healing.
Okay,
and I was standing
nice.
By the curtain, back behind the curtain, and Tex Lassinger and Shanghai Pierce are in the ring, and I'm standing with Barry Windham, and Barry goes, you know, you were supposed to be part of this tag team. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, but then you hurt your knee, and then you went with Dennis. And I was like, ah, shit, you know.
Goodness. Okay, what suggestions do you have for people wanting to get into the business?
Don't. No, I'm just kidding. Make sure, you know, today's, it's hard to say who is a reputable, what's that word? Who is a good trainer? That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's so hard to find someone who's truly a good trainer because so many have passed away or no longer want to be part of it or just too old to do it. I mean, you got so many people they got rings in their backyard. I mean, hey, honey, I got our tax refund. I heard that you can buy a ring off High Spots. Oh, send it. You know, and they start watching videos on YouTube. Next thing you know, they're trainers. So you just got to make sure you pick, and there's so many schools now. I mean, God, there's, in the Tampa area alone, I think there's like 5 different schools, maybe more than that. It's crazy.
And then the follow-up is what schools do you suggest?
I don't know.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
I don't know. I suggest...
All right, sign. Excuse me.
Well, I mean,
Cody
Rhodes has a school, right? Cody Rhodes has a school, and I think the guy that played Glacier, Ray Lloyd, who's also a longtime friend, I think he's one of their head trainers, or he was. So if you can't learn from those guys, then you're not good. Dustin Rhodes has a school. Dustin's one of the best. I had his first match ever. I always got to throw that in there because that's one of my claims to fame.
All right, cool. Sign?
Now, speaking of schools, one of the guys that maybe wasn't a household name as far as being a major star in professional wrestling, but he trained a huge number of guys that went on to become superstars in wrestling and was the OVW head trainer, that being Rip Rogers. I'm sure you crossed paths with Rip Rogers. What's one of your favorite moments that you had with Rip?
Oh, Rip. I love Rip. He was always cool to me, and we teamed up several times in WCW, made a couple trips together. I saw him at Cali for Alley Club for the first time in, geez, probably 20 years, maybe 3-4 years ago. Just a great guy, and he was very good. So he's another guy. If you can't learn from Rip Rogers, then maybe you should take up needlepoint. But, yeah, he was a great guy. He's a great guy. And definitely one of the best. I mean, he made a name for himself in different areas. He was here in Florida with Miss Brenda, feuding with Bugsy McGraw in like 84. I think that's when I first became aware of him and on Georgia Championship Wrestling or whatever. But to answer your question, just a great guy. Fun to be around, happy-go-lucky, you know. The kind of people you want in your dressing room, in your company.
Exactly.
Not afraid to hold back either and tell you what he thinks.
We know that you guys do the Fan Fest down there, and you just had one. You also that you help out with the Cauliflower Alley social media. What do you got coming up, Bob?
Well, they are doing a Fan Fest, I think it's June 3rd in Tampa, the CWS Fan Fest. Unfortunately, they just announced it's the last one they're going to do. But this guy, Barry Rose and David Pinzer, you know David Pinzer from WCW, and he does Impact Wrestling, ring announcer still. He's a great guy. I've known him for over 30 years. Went to his wedding even. Got drunk with Bob Roop. How cool is that? But it's June 3rd in Tampa. You have to go to Facebook and just type in CW FanFest. I'm going to be there. I always get – they don't actually pay me to be there, which would be nice because, you know, I worked for Championship Wrestling in Florida. We were the tag team champions, but that's a whole other story. But they always let me go to the show or, you know, to the event show. And I have a friend that brings me and lets me stay for free. So it's, you know, it's cool. And I'm going to the next one. Ken Patera is going to be there. Steve Kern, Jerry Briscoe, Haku. Leilani Kai, who is an awesome person as well, legendary wrestler. You know her, right? Of course you do. WrestleMania 1, Wendy Richter. Who else is going to be there? I'm trying to think. Oh, Michael Capetta, Gary Michael Capetta, who's one of the legendary ring announcers, moved to Florida recently. He's going to be there. So that's a great time. It always is a great time. They put on a stellar event. They limit the amount of tickets that they will sell so that you have a more personal
intimate
experience,
yeah,
which is always good. What they're calling it is the Super Bowl of wrestling, because there was a show here in Florida in 1978 called the Super Bowl of Wrestling. It was Harley Race against Superstar Billy Graham, WWF versus NWA, Gorilla Monsoon was special referee. Really cool event at the Orange Bowl in Miami, which, by the way, I'm rambling again, but I wrestled Scott Hall at the Orange Bowl in Miami and made the most money I ever made for one match that lasted a minute and 30 seconds that I wasn't even supposed to be at, thanks to Kevin Sullivan. But anyways.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fun event because I met Ken Patera in Las Vegas a few years ago, and he's awesome. Got a lot of great stories. But anyways, they always put on a top-notch event, and we just had our Legends Lunch last week in Tampa where we honored the Nasty Boys, where Brian Knobbs gave two phenomenal speeches. We also paid tribute to our friend Lanny Poffo, who passed away a few weeks ago. And he always used to come to our Legends Lunches until he moved to Ecuador. But what a great guy he was. But Brian Knobbs gave a great speech about Lanny and then speech about his own, because I don't know if you know anything about our Legends Lunches, which if you're ever in Florida, you're always invited. But Brian's been doing it for over 20 years, what they call the Legends Lunches. Jack Briscoe and Bugsy McGraw, Mike Graham, and Steve Kern and other guys in the area started these Legends Lunches as a way to cheer up Hiro Matsuda, another great guy, and Gordon Sully, who were both dying from cancer at the time, and they just had these lunches get together as a way to cheer them up, and they've grown over the years, and we have them every 3 or 4 months, and it's just a blast because you just get to see all the people, you know, that you love. You know, you got Danny Spivey, Scott. I'm gonna ramble here. Danny Spivey, Scott McGee, it's the Cuban fun. Assassin, Haku, Ricky Santana, of course, Brian Blair, Bugsy McGraw. Did I say Bugsy McGraw? And just a bunch of the local Tampa Dean, or not Dean Malenko, Joe Malenko always comes, and it's just a great time.
Yeah, sure. Those are amazing.
You tell lies and things like that.
Those are amazing, and no, I haven't made it to Florida yet, but my goodness, I definitely need to. They have so many cool things and so many cool places and people down there. Definitely would like to get down there. Fine?
Oh, it's a cesspool, and I hate it, but been a horrible winter. Not even hardly maybe 3 days of cold the whole time. But anyways, you were talking about what we're doing, but the Legends Lunches are just a blast. It's kind of like a mini version of the Cali Fire Alley Club. And Brian always brings the Cali Fire Alley Club newsletters and mentions to the guys, hey, join the Cali Fire Alley Club. And we do the group pictures as well, like you were talking about. We always do the group pictures.
Yeah, and then it's
Ronnie
the tragedy
was there
in the
last
North,
week.
The Northwest doesn't do them. They did a few when Dean Silverstein Stein was still alive. They had a few of them, and I never got a chance to make it to one. My goodness.
Yeah, it's just fun to, you know, relive the past and hear the stories, because that's what it's all about. And Brian, like I said, Brian Knobbs told some great stories and about his career and how much he appreciated his time in wrestling and what he said about Lanny Poffo led all of us in tears. And it was just a fun time. I think you can see Brian's speech is on our Legends Lunch Facebook page that I made.
Okay, cool. Yes.
And it's for
all
the Legends Lunch isn't a fan fest.
All of the besides the fan fest and the conventions, things like that, a lot of times fans will rely on newsletters to sort of educate them on the business side of professional wrestling and the history of professional wrestling. I know people within the industry have opinions both ways as it relates to newsletters. Did you, when you were full-time, read the newsletters to keep abreast of what was happening around the country within the industry as a whole, or did you stay away from that type of thing?
No, I read them once in a while. You know, it's funny. I first got the newsletter. I was a collector of the wrestling magazines when I was a kid, and then even when I was in the business, I still liked buying all the wrestling magazines. You know, I think it was in an issue of like Wrestling Monthly or Wrestling Review. In the back, they always had a classified section, and it had this ad for a guy who was selling back issues of wrestling magazines, or not back issues, but you know, old wrestling magazines. And you would send for the list, and I did it, and the guy happened to be Dave Meltzer, and he didn't send me his list of wrestling magazines. He sent me a copy of his newsletter. This is like probably 1983, 4, I don't know, something like that. And he sent you a copy of his newsletter, and then, you know, that was his tease. His tease was, you're getting a list for wrestling magazines, but then he'd send you the newsletter, and then you'd hopefully buy into it, which I did at the time. You know, it wasn't that expensive. It still isn't that expensive. But what's funny is you mentioned the newsletters. Dave Pinzer, who I love, used to like to drive and read the freaking newsletter. So you're driving on the road at 80 miles an hour, and Dave's driving, and he's reading the newsletter. But a lot of guys used to read the newsletter. And I think Dave Meltzer, when it comes to, like, wrestling knowledge, he's one of the best guys out there. Does he get everything right? No, but who does? But, it, like, when you like when someone passes away, he has an amazing stories about the guy who dies, right? I'm like, what do we call it? The biography of the person who passed away, the detail he goes into. Incredible. But that's the only one I ever really follow. And I don't do it anymore. I mean, I check his website every day for, like, the news section and little things, but I don't buy the newsletter. But, again, it's such a small group of people in the grand scheme of things who read the newsletters compared to the millions of actual fans. I mean, well, they got, like, 100 million people who follow WWE on YouTube, probably 2% know about a newsletter.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Okay, hey, Bob, my next segment, it's a short one. It's called Favorites. Let the fans know, what was your favorite concert you've seen?
Well, you know, I was never a fan of live music for the most part. So I was never a concert guy, even though I did go to a couple concerts. But I will tell you this. I did go to a concert back in 2018. Pink. You know who Pink is, right? I've always been a fan of Pink. I'm not necessarily – it's not my style of music for the most part, but I love Pink. I think she's fantastic. And she put on such an amazing show. Sold out. It was in Orlando, same place where the Orlando Magic played. Me and Darlene went. And it was amazing to the point where I would never go to another concert again unless it was Pink, because I know I'd be disappointed, right? I'd go, oh, look, there's U2. Yeah, it was a good show, but it wasn't as good as Pink, so why bother going, right? That was
the best
concert I've ever been to. And I went to a couple other concerts. I went to my wife was a fan of country music, and I told her, hey, I got to wrestle at the Sundome in Tampa. You want to go? I never brought her to the shows because, you know, who wants to bring your wife? When you're in wrestling, you use wrestling to escape the real world. And if you're bringing your wife with you, you're defeating the purpose of what I just said. But anyways, I told her, hey, you want to go? Yeah, I'll go. So I packed my bag and everything. We get to the Sundome, and the Travis Trent's bus is there. What's Travis Trent doing here? You know? And I did that again for Hank Williams Jr. for her, just to surprise her, back when I actually cared about her. Now I don't care about her because, you know, ex-wife. But
okay.
But I've never been a big
concert
guy.
That's a sweet story. Okay, and then one of my other favorite ask is, you said you're not a fan of sports, but we're wondering if there's any team out there for any type of sports, no matter if it's your high school civics club, is there any sports teams or teams that you enjoy or are fans of?
No.
I figured you didn't. That's why I threw the high school civics club in there.
Yeah. Back in whenever the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, I worked for an airport limo service, and I didn't even care when they win because it interrupted my life because there was chaos at the airport when they won, and I had to be there.
Okay. All right, Signy, how many more questions you got, brother?
I've got one more. You stayed mainly in the southeast part of the country. You didn't work full-time territories like in Canada or on the West Coast, pretty much. If you could go back in time and use that time machine and work for several months or a year in one of the old full-time territories outside of the region where you did work, what would be the number one territory you would apply to for a job?
Probably Memphis, just because it was so, you know, I know you didn't make a lot of money there, but the times I was there, which was, you know, I went there in 87, they brought me and a guy named Bucky Sigler and there'd be the Southern Boys for a couple weeks, because the original Southern Boys were Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong, and they were booked in that territory, but they signed a deal with Crockett, and so they just brought me and Bucky in to fill their bookings. So it was a lot of fun. Again, we didn't make a lot of money, but it was fun. And the other times I was in Memphis was fun when me and Jerry were the Mighty Yankees. Then I got to wrestle Jerry Lawler on Memphis TV one time, which was absolutely a blast. So that would be it probably, just because it's a territory that involved a lot of more the brawling and the fighting, which is what I've always liked the most, punching and kicking. But I was never,
I never liked
to fly, which is what kept me, like, I would also have taken up the funks on the offer to go to Japan, which I didn't do. They told me, hey, you want to go to Japan? We can get you there. And I would just, yeah, okay, yeah, and I just never pursued it because I hate to fly. And the idea of flying 18 hours to Japan never appealed to me.
Yes, that's a long flight. I go to Korea every year or two, and man, 11-hour flight over there and 9 hours back, and it's not fun.
Yikes. Yeah, I'm not going.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to drive everywhere when we came to
Okay, yeah, lots of miles, yeah.
No, we drove, me and Robbie Ido and a guy named Paul Drake drove all the way to Michigan one night to do WCW one day, all the way to Michigan, did the show, and drove all the way back.
Wow. That doesn't sound – driving's not fun like that.
Well, you know, when I was wrestling, like I say, I used it to escape the real world. So when I would go on a trip, like say we'd leave on a Sunday and I wouldn't get back till a Friday and then we'd do independent shows. So I wasn't home a lot in that era. So it was great, right? And you'd tell your wife, say, yeah, I'll see you Friday. She couldn't call you 2 minutes after she left and ask when you're going to be home, you know. You might check in a couple times during the week and call her in the hotel. You know, one time I was in Atlanta. We stayed at the Ramada Inn there, which is where everybody stayed and partied at this place called The Dungeon. But Penelope Paradise went on a lot of trips with me in that era to WCW and with the other guys, because I was one of the guys that rented cars. WCW would pay for all of it, and I would bring guys to TV with me. So I always pick people who were my friends that I got along with. Otherwise, why would I want to take people I didn't like? But I could take whoever I wanted to bring. And I always pick guys that I like, but people who could work, too, because, you know, a reflection of my judgment if they couldn't. I'm actually the guy that got Johnny B. Badd into WCW based on that same analogy.
Awesome. You know,
Jody Hamilton called me one time.
Of wrestling, yeah.
Yeah. Jody called me and he said, hey, do you got anybody different you could bring up this week? And I said, yeah, I know this guy. He just started training at Malenko. He looks good. He's a little green, but he's coming along. And he goes, oh, bring him up. And he got noticed by Dusty. Right place, right time, right? But
exactly. Awesome.
What was I talking about?
And then you also mentioned Sean Waltman. You knew him before he got into wrestling. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm a huge fan of his, too.
Yeah, you know, I can't even remember how we actually met originally. You know, he was there was this woman named Phyllis Lee who at the time lived with Tony Marino. And Phyllis later went on to manage MMA fighters. She managed Ken Shamrock, if you go back and watch, not Ken Shamrock, maybe Kim Shamrock, but definitely Dan Severin. You go back and watch Dan Severin when he was both the NWA champion and wrestling, or not wrestling, but doing the UFC stuff. Phyllis was in his corner a lot, but she became good friends when I trained with Tony Marino in like 85 for a while at his school, just to learn different things as I started working for a company here in Florida that Malenka was involved with and Tony was involved with, and Phil Poffo and others. And so Phyllis was there, and that's how I think I initially met Sean. But yeah, he's always been a good, really good guy. And we text back and forth once in a while. So I was always proud of his success. A lot of people, you know, rag on him, but the guy was good, you know?
He
got a
was,
break,
my goodness.
He took advantage of it.
He has some great matches in the books, too, my goodness.
Oh, definitely.
All
but
right,
yeah,
Bob, is there anything else? Anything else you'd like to plug or promote?
I wish there was, because that might mean I'd make some money. But unlike,
okay.
But just like my wrestling history, there's no money for me to be made. Damn it.
Well, you're still selling T-shirts.
Nah, I haven't sold one in a while. That was one of those deals where, like, you post on, you got 5,000 friends on Facebook, which only about 2% you actually know, and the other,
yeah,
and 1% of those you don't really know very well, right? And then you post a thing, hey, who would buy T-shirts? Oh, I would. You know, I made like $1,000 selling T-shirts when I first put it up, but now it's just a dead issue. No one cares. Basically, just a couple of people who might really be a fan bought one, and then friends is trying to be nice, you know.
Okay.
But I appreciate it. But I would say, if there's any convention people out there that want to bring in an old loser, I'll come in for a few bucks and pretend to be nice.
Hey, you're a winner in my book, brother, and I'm not afraid to say I love you, Bob, and I'm wishing you all the luck in the world, brother. You got anything else, Fine?
I just thank you so much for being with us today. We definitely appreciate it, and it's always been a pleasure to talk to you and to watch you on television throw that great punch.
I appreciate it. It was, again, I say, without hesitation, it was the best time of my life. I am not bitter in any way. And I think that people should appreciate all the women and men who still put their bodies on the line day in and day out for the love and the passion of professional wrestling. And regardless of what Vince McMahon wants to say in his high and mighty mansion, it is professional wrestling. He can call it anything he wants, but it's still professional wrestling. If Vince McMahon said the sky was green, does that make the sky green? No, it's still blue, and it's professional wrestling. That's my take.
Right on, Bob. Thank you so much. And, hey, you're welcome back anytime. And anytime, I should have a 5-minute Bob Cook segment so you gave some people some insight. I'm not sure if you're interested, but, man, anytime you'd like to come on and school these people, you're welcome.
I'll start writing down some good lies to come up with so I don't repeat myself. Like, I'll lie to you and say, I'm not going to have Mountain Dew and eat pizza later. Uh-huh, wink, wink.
What's your favorite pizza?
I'm just a basic guy. Either, like, just cheese or cheese and bacon, once in a while pepperoni, but that's it. I'm a basic guy. Light on
the
sauce, extra cheese, you know.
Who makes the best pizza besides you? Besides you.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say. My pizza that I make myself is my favorite, but as far as, I don't know, I mean, I just use the, nowadays when it comes to this pizza that you order, it's like, yeah, get the cheapest, Little Caesars, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Once in a while. I like those new Pizza Hut melts. Those are good.
Okay, I'm going to have to try that. Nice.
Yeah,
right,
they're only $6.99 too.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
for everything you've done for wrestling. Thanks so much.
My back doesn't thank you, but I thank you.
All right. There you go, Bob Cook, the cooker out of Florida. Really grateful for having him on. And, man, I could talk to him for hours. My God. Hey, Sign, you got any show notes?
I do have some show notes. People are looking for some professional wrestling.
later today. DOA back in Portland, Oregon at the North Portland Eagles. Blue Collar Wrestling returning after a several-month hiatus. They are in Milwaukee, Oregon today at the Eagles. They're doing a one-off show today. Not yet back to a weekly schedule, but they will be running a show in Milwaukee. BZW in Bismarck, North Dakota. XWX in Ozark, Alabama. Supreme Wrestling in Madison, Indiana. Wrestle Club featuring the Potato Bowl Tournament in Nampa, Idaho. WrestleRama in Waldron, Michigan. WWA in Livermore, Kentucky. Innovate Wrestling in Kingsport, Tennessee. Five Star Wrestling in Jeffersonville, Indiana. PPW in Bedford, Indiana. ECW in Somerset, Kentucky. BTW in Huntington, West Virginia. NWF in Cincinnati, Ohio. DPW in Zanesville, Ohio. PWE in Alton, Illinois. TSW in Corbin, Kentucky. DPW in Dwight, Illinois. MSWA featuring Teddy Long in Rockwood, Tennessee. And MATW in Gloucester, Virginia today. Tomorrow you can catch Summit Pro Wrestling happening in Greenfield, Indiana.
All right, thanks, Sign. And then what do you got coming up?
Coming up next week on the 11th, I'll be back for Northwest Pro in Vaughan, Washington at the Key Peninsula Civic Center. On the 25th, I will be back for Rogue Wrestling Attractions at the Civic Center in Ocean Shores. On Turnbuckle Turmoil tomorrow, we have Big Ramp Manager out of Louisiana. And then next Friday afternoon, we welcome back Chief Atakula Kula.
Right on. Okay, cool. Yes, I'm proud and honored to be a co-host on your show, Turnbuckle Turmoil. And I've been too busy lately to do the Friday show, so we got Chris Marks to fill in, so I'm glad that worked out. Also, you guys can check us out every Saturday at noon Pacific time for the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast. I'm really thrilled about my next two guests also. I've got Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Famer Aaron Bolo on next week. And then on the 18th, I got Hannibal Nicholson from Hannibal TV. I'm excited about both those, and I can't wait for those. And you guys can check me out at the Coach Mike Jones, the Coach with the Most. Also, Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. Also, every Saturday at noon Pacific, my show. Sundays at 1, the Turnbuckle Turmoil. If you need any projects done in the Northwest, we can build a house from the ground up. We're licensed, insured, and bonded general contractors at A-plus Handyman Services. No job too big or small, 10% cheaper than any written estimate, and 15% cheaper for military and seniors. All right, we thank you guys for all your support and love and feedback. And we're just so grateful. And, Sign, do you got anything else?
Don't forget, you can follow me on the Book of Faces, on the Gram, on the Twitter, but not literally. Not literally. Also, if you subscribe to the YouTubes, TheSignGuy77, it will prevent Stump and Steve from having both a nervous stomach and a sneezy head. Nobody wants to see a 6'8" guy with a sneezy head and a nervous stomach at the same time. Imagine the horror that would be coming out of those orifices.
That's for real. You know, that might make it so he can't make those beautiful flyers that he makes. My goodness.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for episode 570 of The Sign of the Times, moments away from being able to consume that.
And that crazy guy who was out the window is not in it, is he?
I don't think so.
Because it's from an undisclosed area, and then I'm sure Chicken Bob's in there. Let the fans know about our buddy Chicken Bob.
Well, Chicken Bob, also very active on the gram, the Twitter, and the Book of Faces. He loves the social media, and he'll also be in attendance next week at Northwest Pro, and he loves to go to Ocean Shores. He loves it.
Nice. And then we got the XFL, Seattle Sea Dragons are in Vegas to play the Vegas Vipers at Cashman Field there here coming up shortly. The Sea Dragons are now 0-2, but we're hoping they can turn it around and they might make a quarterback change today. We'll see how that goes. The Kraken have been kicking ass. They've been on the road. They won in Detroit in overtime two games ago, and then last night they won in Columbus against the Blue Jackets with Grubauer with another solid performance at goalie.
Now, Coach, do you remember when Columbus had a female professional basketball team and they won the championship?
I don't, but I am a fan of the Seattle Storm, yes.
Well, this was the rival to the WNBA back when that league first formed. There was a second all-female league that did not have the backing of the NBA. Columbus was the number one team in that league. They dominated the season, won the championship, but because Columbus was a small market and the most dominant team, it just didn't garner the amount of support, and of course they didn't have NBA dollars, so the league pretty much folded after that.
Well, that sucks. I'm sure you can still catch some of that on YouTube. And then the Mariners,
so. Now,
yes,
Seattle did have a team coach. It was the Seattle Reign, and they played at the old Mercer Arena.
And they had Starbird was their name.
Katie Starbird, yes.
Katie Starbird, I was a huge fan of hers. All right, then you got the Mariners out there. They won yesterday in Arizona. Today, right now, they're playing Colorado. The Mariners are 4-4, and Colorado's 3-4. But the Mariners are down at the top of the sixth. It's now 5-0 Rockies. So hopefully they can turn it around.
Absolutely.
And
the Cincinnati Reds ahead in the bottom of the fifth, 6-5 against the Kansas City Royals, whom are going back to the powder blue uniforms this season.
Okay, and the Reds have been having a decent spring training, haven't they? Some of their rising stars have been shining. I've been seeing on the Facebook pages.
They're looking pretty good, although the spring training games and a regular season game vastly different. Joey Votto taking his time to make his return because he doesn't want to come back too soon and shorten his career at this stage in the game.
Okay, for sure. All right, you guys, is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote, Sign?
You can find former Northwest Pro competitor Jared Savage in Jeffersonville, Indiana today at the arena. He is making his 5-star wrestling debut against Scarecrow. Scarecrow and I go back many, 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 many years. In fact, Scarecrow and Dice once got into a fight in the locker room. I used the opportunity to try to sneak off a gurney, go to the ring, and get my heat back after I broke my face, but it didn't quite work.
Oh, my goodness, Sign, you deserve a medal for that one.
Probably, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I almost had one of those rogue firemen talk into it, but at the last second, his professional mind took over, and he knew he couldn't do it. But Dice and Scarecrow, they got into a bit of an altercation because Dice didn't know Scarecrow, actually a trained paramedic who was keeping me safe and alive at the time. He thought he didn't know what he was doing. Dice was going to kill him. It was just a misunderstanding spot.
And them firemen had a rough night that night, too. But, you know, good thing you live to tell, my goodness.
I was fine. People just didn't know it at the time. Now, if you listen to the show yesterday, Mr. Billy Jed, he thought I was done for as well. He was a little bit scared. He says it was the worst injury he ever saw.
Man, you impacted a lot of people that night. Flash Flanagan, Tracy Smothers, and others.
Tom Van Zandt told me years after the fact he still had nightmares.
And then,
in fact, he on this very program discussed such.
That's because you dented the concrete.
Well, that's true. Now, keep in mind,
right,
I did win that match via Castigo Excessivo, as Beast Barnett ruled as the official in charge of officiating.
All right, guys. Thanks for another great show. Thanks, Sun Guy. Thanks, Bob Cook. And here's my song from Joe Love and the Never Were. You can check them out on SoundCloud in all formats. He's got a lot of great songs on there, and he's a great guitar player, and I'm very grateful for him sponsoring my song. Thanks, everybody, and we love you.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones. Coach Mike Jones, now scream!